dedication, presentation of colors, and pledge. We have Mr. Jeff English from Kyle Fire Department to do the invocation. All rise, please.
Would you pray with me? Father God, we give you thanks this day for the opportunity to come before you to remember those who live among us, not to be served, but to serve. And Lord, we thank you for the sacrifices they make day in and day out to show the love of Christ to those in most urgent need. Today, Father, we pray that you'd watch over them and protect them and keep them. Lord, watch over them physically. Keep them safe as they serve in our communities. And Lord, keep them safe from the harmful effects of their service as they live their lives. We ask that you'd watch over them emotionally, Father, that the stresses and the cares of their service may not overwhelm them. We ask, Father, that you'd watch over them spiritually, Lord, that their hearts and minds would be kept safe in Christ Jesus. And Lord, today we're mindful of their families, for those who love servants serve as well. Be with their families. Be with their children. Be in their homes. Lord, we pray for these gathered here to serve these servants. Lord, I ask that you give them wisdom and discernment as they go about your important business today. We ask this in the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Commissioner Gonzalez.
Please join me in the pledge to the United States flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To the Texas flag. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
All right. Roll call.
Commissioner Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Gonzalez.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Cortez. Absent. Commissioner Noster.
Present.
Commissioner Jones.
Here.
Commissioner McMakin. Absent. Commissioner Morgan.
Here.
Commissioner Perez. Here. Commissioner Sharma.
Absent.
Commissioner Stillman.
Here.
Commissioner Tall.
Here.
And Commissioner Garza.
Present.
All right. Item number 3.
Adoption of the commission meeting minutes of April 25th, 2019.
Move for adoption. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for adoption of the minutes for April 25th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 4.
The Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on April 18, 2019 during the commission meeting and provide a report for discussion and possible action relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee, including but not limited to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plan.
Is there any report from the strategic plans, budget and strategic plan subcommittee? Do you have anything you?
I have nothing to say.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
On travel, $2,005 to $8,800 overage.
Yes, so what's happening is that travel in that section has gone above what we have estimated. However, within that strategy, we have enough travel to compensate for it. Next year will be adjusted with that.
Any other questions? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Item number 5.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to organizational purposes, functions, and objectives, including but not limited to Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshal Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Okay, Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
Mike Wisco, standing in for Betty Wilkes. She just wanted to remind everybody of the different educational programs that the fire chiefs offer. We just completed a Chiefs Academy and graduated 27. There'll be another one in October in Garland. We also have our LODD conference coming up in November in Hearst. We have an EMS Chiefs Academy, and we just did our first second-in-command class with 26 chiefs in there as well. That's it. Thank you.
Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Hello, Glenda Shields with Texas State Association of Firefighters. We just got done with our biannual convention just trying to figure out all this cancer stuff that we're dealing with now and a bunch of changes to the workers' comp system that are coming probably in the next, I'd say, 6 months to a year. So that's everything. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
No. Thank you.
State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chris Barron, Executive Director with the State Firefighters Fire Marshal Association. Real quick, we just completed our conference in Longview and appreciate Chief Stillman and the Longview Fire Department for being there for us. Had over 500 in attendance and numerous different training tracks, along with a statewide memorial service honoring fallen firefighters. And want to appreciate all those that were in attendance at the state memorial service at the Capitol this past year, honoring those fallen firefighters with their names going on the monument. That's about all I have to report right now. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Texas Fire Marshals Association. The Texas Association of Fire Educators. The Texas A&M Forest Service. National Fire Protection Association.
Good morning, everyone. Bob Sullivan with NFPA. I'm your Southwest Regional Director. Allow me just to introduce myself for a moment because I don't think I've made one of these meetings yet. My background includes 31 years in the fire service prior to coming to NFPA, and I cover an 8-state region for NFPA, of which Texas is one of my states. If anybody needs my contact information, please let me know. I'll be here for the whole meeting, but I represent everybody here for your NFPA concerns. Just a couple of updates from us. In our 2018 edition of NFPA 1, which is our fire code, we have a new chapter 38 for marijuana facilities, so that's available as a resource now. The 2019 editions of NFPA 13, 13R, and 13D for sprinklers, 72 for fire alarms, 14 for standpipes, and 20 for fire pumps are all available now. We have a new resource in NFPA 96, Appendix B, for food trucks. Provide some information on how to regulate food trucks at events. We have a new standard that will be coming out either later this year or early next year called NFPA 855 for energy storage systems. This particular topic is getting a lot of attention lately. Energy storage systems have been around for a long time, over 20 years, but they're really getting the attention of the fire service nowadays because they're popping up everywhere. We just had an incident in Arizona recently, you may have heard, in Surprise, Arizona, near Phoenix, that injured several firefighters when an explosion occurred at one of these units. So we want to make everybody aware of the standard, and we also have training available on our website, free training available for the fire service about energy storage systems, both from the firefighting standpoint as well as the code standpoint when they're being installed in the first place. We also have a presentation available on that I'm happy to come back and give at a later date. It goes for about an hour to give you some basic information on it. NFPA 1300 for community risk reduction is now available. We're developing a new guide called NFPA 1700. It'll be a guide as opposed to a standard for structural firefighting. Among other things, it's going to incorporate a lot of the testing that UL and other agencies have been doing recently about, you know, other ways to attack a fire, interior versus exterior attack, transitional attack, all those kind of things. We have a new NFPA 2400 out. Unmanned aerial vehicles, otherwise known as drones. It focuses on emergency operations use of drones. You can also use them for inspections and investigations and various other uses. Our new NFPA 3000 is out. It's been out for about a year now for active shooter situations. That one has been getting a lot of interest also. It talks about how to bring together all members of your community, not just the fire service, but also EMS, police, law enforcement agencies, schools, healthcare, etc., to deal with active shooter situations, not from a response standpoint, but from a planning standpoint. Happy to come back and give a presentation on that as well. Of course, we have initiatives that are ongoing for cancer concerns in the fire service, as well as residential sprinklers. So I'm happy to provide more information on at any time. That's what I have. I don't know if there's any questions or not on anything.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. The Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning, Commissioners and members of the Texas Fire Service. My name is Leonard Chan. I'm the current chair of Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. As you recall, I was elected chair by default again. The Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Much of the focus providing support to departments pursuing Center for Public Safety Excellence's agency accreditation program. The next round of accreditation hearings are scheduled at Fire Rescue International Atlanta at the beginning of August. Cedar Park Fire Department is due up for its first renewal. There will also be a series of classes on using fire department data on Friday. Session two on that Friday would be taught by Battalion Chief Kevin Haynes from Frisco Fire Department and myself. And it is supported by SIPC and NFPA. The next cycle of accreditation will include South Lake Fire Department, due for March 2020, and the consortium will provide its support in helping them prepare for that process. The consortium also intends to conduct its annual comparative response time study by the end of the fall. If you have any questions, I'm willing to take them.
Well, thank you. Thank you. State Fire Marshal's Office. All right, item number six.
Discussion and possible action concerning reports by the Commission representative to the Texas Fire School Advisory Board and by representatives of the Texas Engineering Extension Service regarding fire protection training provided by TEEGS through its Emergency Service Training Institute.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Juan Gloria, McAllen Fire Department. And the highlight that I have for my report today is going to end up being the three annual schools that take place at College Station. Last week, we had a Spanish school, international school. Everything went through as expected without a problem. Right now, this week, we have Industrial Fire School in full swing with approximately 740 students. with about 234 volunteer instructors that that perform all the duties of instructing all the classes that we have. And right now, TIC staff is in full swing, also getting ready for the larger training week, which is going to be next week, Municipal Fire School. So far in pre-registration, we have just over 1,400 students. Of course, we have a lot of walk-ins that come in, and that number is going to go up to a ratio of almost 500 volunteer instructors that show up throughout, you know, from all over the state to provide those classes. As far as the annual schools, that's the information that we have to provide right now. And taking advantage of the opportunity and in coordination with Chief Moore, there's also an announcement for free training that is going to be taking place in the city of McAllen September 30th and October the 1st and 2nd. This is the second annual First Responder Safety and Wellness Summit. This is a training that is being provided and funded by the peer organization that is Proactive Education for Emergency Responders. That is an organization that was created a few years ago by firefighters, and with the assistance of TEEKS, we're going to be able to provide free training, high-caliber speakers like Chief Joseph Pfeiffer from FDNY, Dan Kerrigan. We're going to have a bunch of different topics to discuss, from the four pillars of firefighter functional fitness, dealing with PTSD, suicide prevention, sleep deprivation, just to mention some. Again, this is a completely free training that is being provided for emergency responders, fire, EMS, law enforcement, they're going to be able to get not just fire CE, but also EMS CE, as well as tickle CE. And so it's a great deal for being a free event, a three-day event. That's all the information that I have for my report right now, and I'll be willing to take any questions if you have any.
What date did you say it was?
The dates are going to be September 30th, October 1st and 2nd. It's a free event funded by the peer organization and being assisted by TEEKS.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. There are a bunch of flyers on the at the entrance if anybody is interested to get the information. Thank you.
All right. Item number 7.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from Commission Representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Texas Governor's Homeland Security Council, this commission serves as a representation on that committee. There are multiple state agencies that are represented on that committee, especially with ones with response and any type of public safety type response capabilities, and we serve on that. Part of that is that every year that the state of Texas is required to complete an SPR, that's a state preparedness report, and this agency, along with many other state agencies, has a participation in that. We provide documentation about our agency and what our agency's capabilities are for the state preparedness report, and that's what's ongoing. Part of the last meeting is the development of the state preparedness report that will be turned to the governor's office in December for approval of 2020. In January. There's also a THIRA, which is these target hazards identification response system. That is an additional federal requirement that the state completes, and it has core capabilities. It currently has 19 core capabilities that we look at for target hazards in the state. They will be adding 7 to those 19 for a total of 26 hazards that will be looked at throughout the state. So that's part of the discussion and the meetings that go on with the Texas Homeland Security Council. I think our next meeting is September, so we'll have something for you in October.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you, Commissioner Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. Item number 8.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. We have Chief Boyker from Sugarland Fire Department with 2 members of his staff that have worked on one of the projects we were given by Commissioner Gonzalez on the injury reporting.
What?
In the meantime, another project we were tasked was the the Cancer Prevention Awareness Initiative video. So the video is ready, and we're doing last-minute touch-ups with an introduction.
Did you hear a word she said? Mm-hmm. Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. I couldn't hear her.
And just, I want to let everyone know, we do teleconferences and some in-person meetings. It's convenient, you know, in Houston. I invite everyone to my office to, if they can make it, or join by phone. And so we will be, when we set up the next one, we'll be posting it on the website. So please, if you would like to help or join, just, you know, check the website consistently, or you can email Tim or myself and ask us directly.
Things we should have done 15 minutes ago. So good morning again. I'm happy to be back today. It's a pretty good indication that we didn't completely screw it up yesterday at the workshop. So I'm Doug Boker with the Sugar Land Fire Department, and I'm joined with Kylie Jackson and Shahzada Lee. As a refresher, we were charged last commission meeting by Jody Gonzalez, Commissioner Gonzalez, to take the TCFP injury reporting data and figure out what that meant to the Texas Fire Service. And so I passed that on to Kylie Jackson, who's our department analyst, and she utilized our summer intern, Shahzada Lee, who came in. And so literally I gave him a packet about this big, which is 5 years of data, and I asked him to work with Kylie and put together a presentation of about 25 slides that would be easily understandable by the average fire guy. And I think that they've done a very good job with that. And so they're going to present the kind of the 30,000 foot view of the injury status of the Texas Fire Service, and then I'll close it out with some ideas that maybe this committee moves forward with. And then finally, I'm going to have Chief Danny Kistner come up and talk about the other work that the committee is doing.
Okay, so we're the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. We're part of the Health and Wellness Committee. We conducted a five-year injury analysis from January 2013 to December 2017. Let's start. So the mission statement. The mission of the Firefighter Health and Wellness Committee is to provide factual data and practical guides regarding key areas of health and wellness to educate and facilitate the development of action guides by individuals and departments. This is the committee. For the Health and Wellness Committee, we have our commissioner, Ms. Mala Sharma, and the chairman. So we're going to start our five-year analysis. But throughout the presentation, we're going to talk about five-year analysis, practical guidance, and then what we can do better. And when we talk about what we can do better, we're not just talking about what we can use with our data, but what we can also do to collect better data to make it more safe, more efficient for firefighters. So we start with the big one, strains and sprains. This is the overwhelming type of injury that occurs with firefighters. About 47.4% of the total amount of injuries are strains and sprains. That's an average of 1,896 strains and sprains a year. Of that 1,896, 536 firefighters who suffered strains and sprain injury missed time due to the injury. And when they did miss time, they missed an average of 46 days. We can only look at that over the last 3 years to start collecting data. And that number has gone up every single year, going from 41 days missed due to strain and sprain in 2015 to 47 in 2016 to 49 in 2017.
Oh, gracias. We begin looking at an age-injury correlation because we want to know which age groups were making up the most amount of our injuries. So one thing we did want to point out was the two age groups that made up the most amount of injuries were 30 to 34 and 35 to 39. So the 30 age group makes up about two-fifths of the total amount of injuries in the Firefighter Association according to the Texas Commission on Fire Protection data. We began looking at the injuries by type of activity. So there's an average of 774 firefighters who missed time due to an injury over the last 5 years. But when we look at each year, there's an average of 28,588 days missed every year due to an injury. That's the equivalent to 686,112 hours missed, or 238 full-time firefighters off for an entire year. We begin looking at the injuries by activities, and consistently every year except 2016, EMS is the leading cause of injury, followed by fire suppression, station duties, and skills training. Those were the big four. One thing we want to touch on was, when are these injuries occurring? Are they occurring during emergency activities or non-emergency activities? We classify emergency activities as when they're responding to an incident. So whether they're on scene, responding to, or they're returning from. The two leading causes of emergency activity injuries were EMS and fire suppression. The three leading causes of non-emergency activities were station duties, which can range from stubbing your toe when you're waking up in the middle of the night to go save someone, or burning yourself while cooking in the morning. Your skills training and wellness and fitness. We're going to go take an in-depth look at those in a couple slides. One thing we want to explain, the lopsided number right here between emergency and non-emergency, since it's 62-38, was over the last couple years, we're noticing an increase in the amount of non-emergency injuries. That's not because people are getting more injured. It's that they're feeling more comfortable to explain that or report that they're getting injured. So you'll notice in a couple years that number will continually gradually go up and it'll balance out. We want to explain why that number was so lopsided to begin with. When we take a look at the task at the time of injury, we put it into two groups, group one and group two. Group one is made up of activities which the activity made up or task made up more than 10% of the total amount of injuries. There were a big three right there: providing EMS care, extinguishing fires, and physical fitness activities. Those three tasks made up 43.72% of the total amount of injuries. The rest, there are about 10 more that made up 56.28%, but those range from around 8% to 2%.
We take a closer look at physical fitness activities, since it was one of the big three, and 31.7% of physical fitness activities occurred while weightlifting. We look at skills training activities, 15.4% of those occurred while extending or deploying a hose. Over the last 5 years, there were 20,015 total injuries, average of 4,003 per year. We wanted to look at the burn report because there weren't many burns over the last 5 years, probably an average of 120 or so per year, but they can be some of the most dangerous injuries that firefighters face. So there were 592 total burn injuries from 2013 to 2017, 2013 being the year with the most, with 165 burn injuries. We look at the types, and 74.5% of them were thermal injuries, and 23 were scalded steam. And at the bottom left, we look at where these injuries occurred to the body parts. 35% of them occurred above the shoulders. That's the neck, the head, the face, and the ears. 20% of burn injuries occurred to the hands and fingers. And when they did miss time due to a burn injury, it was about 28 days.
Okay, now we're going to move into exposure. So each year since 2013, exposures have been one of the highest percentages of types of injuries, about 24% per year. And we've also seen that exposures have increased every year since 2013. And looking at that, you might think, wow, we're really experiencing a lot more exposure injuries. But the reality is that we're likely seeing that there are more reporting of exposure injuries. So as we continue to increase the number of reports that are being turned into the TCFP, we're likely to see an increase in exposure injuries. Alongside that, we also have a high number of undetermined exposure routes and unknown exposure descriptions included in the data. And the likely explanation for that is not that the firefighter doesn't know how they were exposed. It's more likely that there wasn't a correct drop down in the list for them to choose, so they are going to unidentified. So we will talk about maybe some improvements that we can make in the future in that regard. Alongside exposures, we're also seeing issues with absorption and absorption-related injuries. And in our presentation in the slides here, we include some information that was covered by the health and wellness presentation in March of 2019. And one of the big takeaways from that is to limit absorption, be quick, be smart, protect your head. And also, absorption increases 400% with each 5-degree increase in skin temperature. So we realize that alongside the burns that we are seeing to the face, really making efforts to protect the upper body and the neck and the jawline area will be really critical going forward. Now we're going to go into a brief comparison to the United States data, which is collected by the NFPA. It's important to note that the methodology varies between the two, so you can't make an exact you can't exactly compare the two, but we would like to move in that direction in the future. Okay, so it's estimated that there are approximately 57,000 firefighters in Texas and about 1 million in the United States. Approximately half of those firefighters in Texas are career firefighters, and those numbers will be included in the Texas injury numbers. So one thing that we saw is that it appears that Texas is doing very well when it comes to fire ground injuries compared to the national average. It appears that we are having a smaller percentage of fire ground related injuries, so that's something that we're doing really well. It looks like somewhere that we can maybe improve upon are in the non-fire related injuries and other on-duty type of injuries such as skills training. But like I said, the NFPA is collecting data in a different way. They might not be collecting data on as many in-station injuries as we are, so it's important to keep that in mind and look towards getting a more accurate count of those going forward.
Okay, so we're going to start touching on the cancer report. That's the big one for firefighters. So when we look at the cancer report, In the TCFP data, it's reported voluntarily. So we noticed that in 2017, there were only 10 reported cases of cancer, and 14 in 2016. Anecdotally, I think we can all agree that number is much higher, and it's just not being reported properly. So I know Chief's going to touch on making that mandatory. We want to take this from the March meeting because it talks about which cancers are more prevalent in the firefighter community. And so we can tell our firefighters which cancers to look out for, which symptoms to look out for, because they're at a greater risk of these. Firefighters are 2 times more likely to get testicular cancer and mesothelioma than the general population. If you look at the other ones, multiple melanoma and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, they're about 1.5 times more likely to get these types of cancer. So we want our firefighters to know what to look out for. We look at some data from the IAFF. Cancer has cost 61% of firefighter line of duty deaths since 2002. Firefighters have a 9% higher risk of cancer diagnosis than the general population. They're 14 times more likely to die from cancer than the general population. Estimates are that 1/3 of all firefighters will experience cancer at some point in their life. Respiratory, digestive, and urinary cancers are prevalent in the community, and mesothelioma among firefighters is double the reported rate for the general population. We touched on that in the last slide, but we really want to emphasize that here. And Chief's going to take it from here.
And so that's a brief overview of kind of where we are after 5 years of data collection and hitting the biggest points, trying to stay out of the weeds. And so as we looked at it, we found there was a few areas that perhaps we could improve. And the first would be in data collection. And so what we did in our department is I took a brand new compliance officer and put her in charge of TCFP injury reports and told her to go learn the system. And we gave her no guidance. And she found the new FIDO system to be fairly easy to navigate once she finally learned the system, the system worked. And then she reached out to TCFP and got great feedback when she was asking pertinent questions on do I report this or not report that. And so I would guess that a good thing to do is maybe push that information instead of putting the duty on the department to figure it out. Is the commission is well served by Grace, who knows the information, has put together a great tutorial. And so probably we start pushing for departments to report their injuries in a more timely manner and with more specificity. And so along those lines, we found that plain text was very hard for us to data mine. That it 5 years of plain text data was hard to come up with root cause. And so our suggestion would be to still have a plain text that will clarify misconceptions of the report, but to have an algorithm in certain areas, especially when it comes to exposures, because those are so high. And differentiating between an exposure that's reported just to document an incident versus a true contaminated exposure, that an algorithm might help a little further with that. And then finally, pushing the illness side. So there seems to be a general misconception in the fire services of what's reportable and what's not. And with presumptive laws, illness becomes more reportable. And so perhaps a terminology change from injury to injury illness report. What we find is cardiac incidents tend to be a leading cause of LODD. But in our reports, we only found 47 cardiac-related incidents that were reported. So we think that there's probably some underreporting. So these recommendations actually come from the commission, and I wanted to make sure everybody in the audience and might be listening to the transcript later understands that the commission's ahead of the game on this. That this is the recommendation that came out in the 2017 injury reporting data, and the charge was to do exactly what the commission has done with this health and wellness committee. And so you're to be complimented in your foresight of this, and specifically Commissioner Sharma for her work with our committee. She's really done a lot of work to keep us on track. So, but I want to point out a few key words here that was the charge of the data injury report that came out. And so the first bullet, the word awareness sticks out. That's exactly what we're doing here, is we're bringing awareness to the Texas Fire Service of what the industry injury trends are. And the second bullet, usability, explanations, descriptions, definitions, that this presentation
will be uploaded to the website in short order, that it can be referenced later on. And we've really made it simple for people to understand what the root causes are. Third bullet, injury updates, that there's a progression over the 5 years. What we see is, and I want to be clear, that in the slides it looks as though injuries are on the increase. And because of the work of this commission, the actual what's on the increase is the compliance and reporting. So the quality of the data is improving and will continue to get better, as Shahzad had said. And so the work of our committee moving forward in response to this five-year review is I would see this committee moving into some, remembering that our mission is to provide practical, applicable action guides for individuals and departments, that we would look at strains and sprains, since that's the biggest outcome, and look at bringing in industry experts to determine some stretches that can help en route to a call when someone's awoken at 3 o'clock in the morning going to a house fire and 4.5 minutes later they're in the fight of their life. What are some practical stretches that can be done en route? The EMS equipment, when we look at EMS injuries or prevailing cause of injury, it's actually worse than that. It because a separate line item is moving patients during EMS calls. And so the EMS side of our business by far injures more firefighters than anything else we do. And so EMS equipment review, and then teaching our people how to move people. And so I know we have a pretty inclusive orientation process when we onboard new employees, but this work is affecting our next onboarding process, where we're putting moving people into our orientation. It's not going to be a field learned skill anymore. And then finally, equipment deployment and apparatus design, making sure that the fit and function for physical fitness and wellness is put in there, not just for speed. Finally, weightlifting, that was the biggest thing that stood out in the physical fitness arena. And so making sure that we differentiate between weightlifting for fitness versus body sculpting or something more than just fitness. And then reviewing the types of exercises that we might do at a fire station. Finally, cancer. We presented in I think it was actually April. I think we put the wrong date. I apologize. The Health and Wellness Committee, Chief Meyer and Garcia and Danny Kistner presented a very thorough understanding of where we are with cancer. And so we're going to share that report on our website as well. An easy read for a department that wants to get just the nuts and bolts of cancer prevention, where we're at right now, would be the Lavender Report. And when you do, and when all else fails, just clean everything. If it looks dirty, clean it and clean it again. And then finally, the last project we'd be taking on perhaps would be the fire ground injury, and that's based on fire risk analysis, burn prevention when it came to the burns from the shoulders above. There's probably some tactics that can go into preventing those burns. Familiarity and pre-planning, going through processes to educate the fire service and members of what they can do in that area. And so finally, if you have questions about our report, we can answer those now, or I'll pass it to Chief Kistner to wrap up our committee work.
Thank you, Chief Whitaker. We really appreciate it.
I'm Danny Kistner, McKinney Fire Department. I don't know what else I could add to Chief Whitaker's presentation, other than I would like to say that the committee is very energized, very motivated, anxious to get to work on other subjects. The next commission meeting, look for our video on cancer prevention, and also some information on mental health and wellness. Appreciate your team work on this particular project, and we're happy to answer any questions. As far as action items go, Commissioner Sharma, I guess we could ask the commission for adoption of the presentation and for the website, I guess.
I move for adoption of the presentation on injury reporting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for adoption of the presentation. Any questions? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all the members of this committee and Commissioner Sharma for all the work that they've done on this. I've followed this since the adoption of the committee, and they've had numerous meetings and teleconferences and things to, meet the charge that we have given them. So thanks a lot. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you, the committee.
With that, I would like to go off or out off the agenda, the order. I'd like to go ahead and do 26, agenda item 26. It talks about the firefighter injuries.
Discussion of the 2018 data collected on firefighter injuries and possible action on developing recommendations to be submitted to the commission for approval and submission to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Wilson, Public Information Coordinator. And I'm also the administrator for the Injury Reporting Program, as you know. And I just want to say up front that I agree with everything that Kylie and Shahzad said. They did a really great analysis, and I like their recommendations. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about the injury report. So let's talk about it.
The Health and Wellness Committee indicated that fire departments report this voluntarily. It's not mandatory to report.
It is mandatory.
It is mandatory. Do we have a restriction on what can be reported? Are we receiving, are they reporting all cancer incidents, even when they're at risk, like the absolute risk when they're getting checked or evaluated?
I think clearly we can all say that they're not reporting all incidents of cancer. That, in my opinion, I think that is not required at this point. That's still just voluntary. And whether or not they're reporting all injuries and all incidents, I mean, we can't really speculate on that. But like they said, I think that people are getting more comfortable with the injury reporting application, and they are starting to report maybe the less serious injuries at this point, and doing a lot more just documenting for exposures and things like that, which is a good thing.
So in our injury report, we only have 9 reports of cancer diagnosis. And I know in the city of Mission, we have 8. So as the commissioners, what can we do to begin enforcing the fire department?
One of the discussion items has been, as we've been reviewing this year's report, has been to emphasize the mandatory nature of anything that occurs that has been reported to workers' comp. That's our rule language. If it gets reported to workers' comp, it is required to be reported to us. There was a sense that perhaps with a cancer reporting that people weren't seeing that, when departments weren't seeing that in the same light. So as part of the report this year, we've actually gone in and made some clarifying statements letting the departments know, the fire service know, that if you have a cancer incident and it has been reported to workers' comp, that it is required to be reported here. So we're making that clear, and that may be part of the issue that we've run into prior to this. Hopefully, that will increase the reporting.
Okay.
We're looking for approval for submission to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
I have a question real quick. The recommendation section, the report and the documents blank. Is it the intent that we would utilize the recommendations developed by the committee and put those in here?
That would be up to you.
That would be my recommendation.
And I would agree with the commissioner that we've already just accepted the report is a formal presentation that we're going to add and accept, so I would take the recommendations that the Health and Wellness Committee came up with within their presentation and add that as the document that we presented to the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Is that a motion?
Sure.
Second. We have a motion and a second to accept the recommendations from the Health and Wellness Committee to be submitted as our report to the State Fire Marshal's Office. Discussion. Mr. Reedy.
Morning, Commissioners. Jim Reedy for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. I'm very encouraged by what I just heard, that cancer reporting is mandatory. And in that light, I would like to suggest that we do an educational blip, mail out, something to that effect from the commission in an official nature. So to clarify that, with the passage of the new bill and on the tails of that, I think it would be very wrong.
Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, we will go back to the agenda order, item number 9.
New matters from the commission, staff, or public, which may be discussed in future commission meetings.
Do I hear any new matters? All right, hearing none, item number 10.
Discussion of possible action on future meeting dates.
I believe our next meeting is scheduled October 24th, 10 a.m. Anybody have any issues with that?
Yeah. We hadn't been able to schedule beyond that just yet.
Okay. Okay, any further discussion on that item? Item number 11.
Matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee and intended by non-lender 2A. Discussion of possible final adoption of proposed amendments. New section and repeal of college. 1. Discussion of possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 429, Fire Inspector and Plans Examiner. Subchapter B, Minimum Standards for Plan Examiner.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Wisco, Firefighter Advisory Committee. I believe we got a handout for item 1 here. Some additional language that we'd like to be considered in this. This item is an attempt to clarify the intent on who would be able to get their plans examiner 1 certification right now. So what this does is propose a language that would create a grandfather period. There would be a financial impact, somewhat a loss of certification fees for this first year, but it's the right thing to do.
We're looking at this one, correct? Both of them? Either one?
It's your choice. We're putting both of them in front of you to consider.
With the new language, we can still adopt that.
Staff drafted your handout in an attempt to reflect what the advisory committee was recommending. That's what you're looking at. So that's the advisory committee recommendation,
yeah.
The changes to that. So, yeah, that's coming from them.
But this is different from the publication that was put out.
As revised,
all
yes.
Right. Move for final adoption as revised by the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion to
did this one, right?
Adopt.
Staff.
Yeah.
Okay, so adopt the handout, the language in the handout, minimum standards for plans examiner personnel. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this is for final adoption.
Item 2 is 439. It'd be page 38 of the booklet, and it's revising the maximum number of pilot questions. And you can also see the breakdown of the number of questions on the next page, page 39.
Move for final adoption.
Second. Okay, motion and a second to move 11A2 for final adoption. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 3 is just cleanup. The fire and life safety educator, we had a one-year grace period in there, and it expired at the end of February, and we're proposing to remove that. And then there's new language for IPSAC at the back.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion for adoption and a second. Discussion. This will be for 11A3. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Next. 11B, the report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, updated reference list for the hazard materials awareness curriculum.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Pat McAuliffe. I'm the chairman of the Curriculum and Testing Committee. We bring to you today a recommendation to adopt the third edition of the Hazardous Materials Awareness and Operations textbook by Jones and Bartlett Publishers. That would replace the second edition. Second editions are becoming more difficult to find. So we're recommending that change be made in all of the HAZMAT curriculum awareness, operations, and also incident commander.
Take a motion to make that change.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for 11B8, updated reference list for the hazardous materials awareness curriculum. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick reminder, we need to get this effective immediately because finding the books is difficult.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay, so we'll add that to the motion.
Yes.
Effective immediately. Any discussion?
Who was your second on that?
Second. Everybody's good with the change in the motion?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
B, you want the same thing. Update reference list for hazardous materials incident commander?
Yes.
Curriculum also?
I take B and C again.
Check them together? Okay. And C, update reference list for the hazard materials operations, mission-specific competency curriculum.
Right.
With the same recommendations.
Same recommendations.
I so move with the same recommendations and to be done immediately.
Second.
Okay. A motion and a second. Discussion?
Just for clarification, that's 11 B, B, and C.
11 B, B, and C, yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 12, report from Curriculum Testing Committee regarding the review and evaluation of the International Code Council Inspector Certification Program.
Yes, Commissioners, we were asked to take a look at the proposal from the International Code Council in attempt to, for lack of better terms, accept their training and their certification automatically for certification as fire inspector. When it came to our committee, we looked over what information we had. Of note, the committee did not feel that the content of their program did not fully meet the applicable NFPA 1031 standard, which of course our curriculum does, the TCFP curriculum does meet that standard to its fullest. In the notes that the International Code Council presented to us, they were not lengthy, but what we could glean from that was a specific statement that they are not seeking Pro Board recognition on their next, when it comes up for next renewal. It wasn't entirely clear. There was some comments about the different types of testing that they're wanting to do versus what Pro Board would do, but they're not seeking any kind of reaccreditation for their program from Pro Board. I guess for us, one of the big factors that weighed in as to why we would not make a recommendation for accepting their proposal is their testing is an open book type of test. So that is not something that we do here at the Fire Commission. So it would be in total opposition to some of our basic fundamental philosophies of proper testing. So. As such, we do not recommend that we accept their proposal to grant their curriculum for our state certification.
Motion to accept the Curriculum Testing Committee's recommendation to reject this.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
Just pick one.
Pick one.
To accept. Do what?
Accept the report.
Motion and a second to accept the report from the Curriculum and Testing Committee on the evaluation of the ICCICP. How's that? Any discussion?
I'll just say that I couldn't agree more with what he just said. I've looked into it myself. For fear of saying something inappropriate, I'll just say I totally agree and definitely do not need to adopt that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Item 13.
Discussion of possible action, a request from Dan Bowden, PM&R Specialist of Texas, LLC, regarding NFPA 1882 medical exams.
I think it's still good. It's still morning. Thank you, yeah. Mr. President, Commissioners, and staff for allowing us to speak to the Commission. My name is Dan Bowden. I'm a retired, I guess if there is a such thing, retired firefighter from HFD. I was with the department for about 10 plus years, went on to medical school, got my doctorate in medicine, and now I'm doing what I enjoy doing, taking care of the guys and gals that are out there. We formed a clinic in 2016, started doing medical evaluations with firefighters for cancer screening, and in between, while I was also doing that, I was also an editor for the ODG, which is the Official Disability Treatment Guideline across the nation for injured workers. In 2014, I noticed we didn't have guidelines for injured firefighters. I created and wrote those guidelines. And we use those in our practice to make sure that whenever we do have an injury, we can get them back on duty as soon as possible with no relevant re-injury. We are currently doing the medical evaluations, and maintain an enormous database that is important for us and for future studies. And I'm going to let Tom Dolan, who's a partner with us, to go over a little of that information. Thank you very much.
What we are proposing in your red folder on the left-hand side, we have some valuable information. But if you turn your attention to the left side, we have the identification of who we are, and then finally the proposal that we wish to offer to the commission and what we are asking of. I think this, what we are proposing, is a fine complement to the good work of the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee. The incidence that we are speaking of is preemptive, not tallying deaths, tallying people that are off of work and so forth. How many of the firefighters that are out there, and EMS and others, that have present what we could identify is a precursor of cancer? Because we are identifying through the laboratory works and so forth, in the NFPA 1582 exam, we are finding this information. It's a wealth of information. We have over 1,450 firefighter exams completed in the past 3 years. The data is just exciting, scary, but it's to be shared, not held. It's to be shared. So what we are proposing is for the committee, the commission, is to entertain the idea of supporting the effort of developing a data repository based upon the information derived from the NFPA 1582. This would simply mean that that information that is currently provided by medical providers across the state of Texas for the firefighters and paramedics and EMS and others, that this information would be, through HIPAA protection, shared into this data repository. If the information is captured from the NFPA 1582, you're looking at 465 data points. That's what's available, but today it's not shared with anyone. So we were asking for the support of the commission for this endeavor. We would promote that we would be working with the Health and Wellness Committee in this direction, and to be participants in the program. And what we'll be asking of you is that endorsement for this. And with that endorsement, we would proceed with those efforts to develop the data repository. As I said, we're bringing to the table 1,450 records today. This will be open access and available to people for research, and most importantly, that of the commission. Any questions, sir?
I have one, Mr. Chairman. The data points that y'all are gathering, how is that different from what we already are gathering?
The statistics that are currently captured was regarding a workers' comp injury. When we have that information available to us, where the medical provider is doing the examination, they are taking a look at 39 blood tests, 21 urinalysis, the EKGs, chest x-ray, all these types of things, and you've got data points concerning those elements. Just like the annual physical you have from your doctor and the trending associated, this information gives indicators or preemptive indicators of potential problems in cardiac conditions. So instead of waiting for that person to become that statistic, we're looking for preemptive matters, is identifying for the departments, for the areas, by age and all the other demographics associated with it, is to say, how big is that problem? How many people have precursors of cancer? How many people have those things associated with concerns where their body mechanics is not functioning as they should be? So that information is not shared. This information doesn't go back to the fire chief and their admin team. This information is shared with the firefighter and the doctor. But you're okay. You're going to be okay. But all the data associated with that has the potential for research is lost. It's not available.
What about HIPAA laws and
HIPAA
that
laws
sort of thing?
Obviously will be followed. And that means in terms of we will have those devices where information that is derived through the departments, through the medical providers that are rendering those services, will be stripped of that pertinent information that identifies that individual. A small department that we're talking about that has someone that's 60 years old, well, we already know who that is. Well, that's not going to be available to us and not going to be available for research. So HIPAA protection means, quite simply, is that information will not be shared with us, and obviously because of that, in any reporting fashion.
So the medical providers that are providing this information, that's in addition to what we have reported from workers' comp, do the patients know that, you know, the vital information is stripped, but that their number is being reported?
We will be offering guidance to those medical providers where the pre-authorization will have a release of that information, where the firefighter will be signing off that information is going to be shared. So in that, the medical providers, and we're looking at formats that may become an Excel spreadsheet or report or whatever it might be, we are just hungry for the data. And what we would hope to see is that the departments will say, all right, you medical provider or team are responsible for my annual physicals. Now, as part of that is we are strongly encouraging you to participate in sharing that information with. We cannot mandate, obviously. But the wealth of information that's coming, we're excited about that. And some of the things that were discussed here earlier as to conditions of sleep deprivation
PTSD.
This information, how do you find this? You find it as a statistic too late. We want to be preemptive in our efforts.
Are there specific medical providers that will be providing this information, or how will you get which hospitals or medical providers you'll be going to?
What we'll be doing is we'll be asking for the cooperation through the support of the commission to go back to the departments and say, who is your medical provider? And then through the Health and Wellness Committee, we would provide that information to the providers and say, we need this information and so forth, any questions, issues, and then we would be pulling that information in for the purposes of study.
Mr. Chairman, have you guys tried to do an open records request to the department or workers' comp, the division of workers' comp?
No.
That may be a better...
The reason why is because information... I worked with workers' comp, the largest employer in Harris County, for 13 years. The information you derive from workers' comp is not the simple information, because what you're looking for is a claim. Well, the fact is, a claim, that doesn't seem preemptive in our minds. The fact is that you have individuals that have cardiac conditions. You don't have to wait for them to have a stroke or incident. That may not even be reported in workers' comp. So we're looking for provider to provider sharing of information, which is commonly done in the health industry.
Has this organization looked into working with SAMC, the San Antonio Military Medical Center? It's my understanding that they are actually looking into this already. Like, they're gathering data and everything.
Is this somebody we should be working with? Yes, that's the kind of thing, because some people are excited about this opportunity to do this. So their information, based upon how many firefighters they're doing, we're bringing to the till 1,450. Who else has other firefighters to participate and share that information? Yes, sir.
I see where y'all are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Yes.
What... What do y'all charge for the medical exams, or do you charge for the medical exams and also the additional screening?
The 513C, or C3, does not charge for an evaluation. We've just started our formation for the foundation, and the goal of the foundation is to accumulate funds, grants, that we will be able to utilize that money to departments that don't have funding for these medical evaluations. We will be able to utilize that determination to, hey, we got you taken care of, we'll be on site, and we can get you get the medical balance taken care of. And that data, again, will be HIPAA compliant, which will eliminate their names. The firefighters will get their evaluations and a copy of it. Now, the only thing that the department will get from us will be a data analysis report after we've completed that. And the department will be able to have, hey, I've got 28 firefighters. This is what has shown up in the data, not names, but in the data. It will not have ages. It will only have data from that department.
All right. We appreciate your coming to us, and what I would like to do, if appropriate, is ask our health and wellness ad hoc committee to talk with them, to look through it, and then come back with a recommendation to the commission from the committee.
That sounds good. We can definitely talk about it. And schedule our next meeting, and hopefully anyone else that wants to join, we'll post it and let you know ahead of time.
Okay.
Andrew, I was just going to add that before going any further, would ask that you get legal advice on kind of what type of structure or recommendation we might be able to accomplish and what we might not be able to accomplish.
Would agree. And that's kind of the question that I had, Mr. Chairman, is, nonprofit LLC, if we're making a recommendation supporting an organization, is there any procurement issues related to that? I know there's not a cost in it, but there still could be procurement policy and things.
Can you advise our health and wellness committee?
Well, I think they're acting for the commission in this capacity, so I think it's fair to advise them. I will say that we will definitely advise the board if with the recommendation comes back, we can put that
in. Right. Okay.
And all right. I believe the Texas Department of Insurance is working on some of this stuff, too, so you guys may check in that route as well.
Okay. So, Commissioner Sharma, y'all mind taking that charge?
No, we would gladly accept. Thank you. Yeah.
Very briefly, I would like to know in that report for the wellness, how many medical exams would be free for the firefighters approximately per year? How many would be provided?
It would depend on how much funding we have available. Also in the packet, September the 14th, we're having a first responder appreciation day. All the funds that are collected, it's going to be we're going to have police, fire, EMS, Wi-Fi, military, and all the funds that are collected for this will go directly to the screening process for all firefighters that are in that situation where they have no money.
Okay. Again, thank y'all for your presentation. Work with that group, and then we'll go from there.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, sir.
The LLC is a different company than the 501c3. Yeah. And it's still MNR Foundation. But okay. Yeah, the LLC is MNR Services in Texas.
All right. They'll gather that information.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right, item number 14.
Discussion of possible action and request from Chief Danny Kistner, McKinney Fire Department, regarding life safety initiative number 9.
Morning, Commissioners. Commissioner Moore, thank you once again for indulging me with a discussion on firefighter life safety initiative number 9. Which is to thoroughly investigate all firefighter fatalities, injuries, and near misses. And if you would indulge me for a little bit, I'm probably going to go off script because this is a subject that I'm very passionate about. As you're aware, State Fire Marshal and the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health are charged with investigating firefighter fatality already. But before a fatality can occur, you have countless, hundreds if not thousands, of near misses or close calls and minor injuries that culminate into that one fatality. So look at all that information that could possibly be gleaned or foreshadowing or warnings that action could be taken to prevent that one fatality that we're missing. 16 firefighter life safety initiatives, for those that are not familiar, are the culmination from the National Fallen Firefighter Protection, National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, that began in 2004 when Chief Ron Sarnicky, the executive director of the foundation, retired fire chief, started noticing that applications for the firefighters memorial in Emmitsburg, a lot of these fatalities were all for the same thing. We weren't inventing new ways to kill firefighters. So from 2004 to 2007, over 250 fire service leaders from across the nation met and facilitated discussions to come up with ways we could reduce firefighter line of duty death, and that translated into reduction in firefighter line of duty injuries as well. They had a 10-year plan at that time in 2007 to reduce firefighter line of duty deaths by 50% by 2 years ago. And getting close, but not quite there. One of those recommendations of the 16 life safety initiatives was initiative number 9, and that is to thoroughly investigate the fatalities, injuries, and near misses. In 2007, I became a life safety advocate for the Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and part of my charge as a life safety advocate is to find a way to embed the 16 life safety initiatives into the fire service culture. So in 2007, about this time in 2007, Arlington, Austin, Garland, Lancaster, San Antonio brought these initiatives into a Everyone Goes Home program here in Austin. And we had a survivor story that was told during this presentation. That survivor story involved an Austin fire officer that was burned during the search and rescue operation and was pulled out of this operation by one of his partners. And some people are probably familiar with that particular event. Positive outcome. But they were very good in sharing the information that happened at that event so that other people may not experience the same thing. The value of lessons learned cannot be overstated. There's other industry that experiences similar life safety hazards as the fire service, and that is airline industry, the medical industry, and the railroad industry. They've all adopted similar programs of evaluating near-miss, close-call injuries in an effort to reduce the incident. And all three industries were successful in reducing incidents through these programs. And the collateral impact from that was they enhanced relationships between management and labor. They also saw a reduction in events following the recognition of the problem and implementation of that particular system. As I was president of the Texas Fire Chiefs Association in 2016, that was one of my mantras, something I wanted to get past. We had a conference call with the Texas Fire Service Consortium, and in principle, everybody was in agreement that this is something that should be codified. But there was some reservation, some hesitation as pushing it forward in legislation. There was a concern that this may become another unfunded mandate, and things such as that may be too time-consuming. Where's the information going to reside, and things such as that. What I'm going to propose at the end of my lengthy discussion here is a modification of that presentation back then, and maybe we could take a little baby step to get some of this moving forward. So I also want to bring attention to the Texas Fire Chiefs Association best practices recognizes the need for after-action report, especially with firefighter injuries are concerned. On their manual, Chapter 10, Section 10.03 requires the authority having jurisdiction shall have a policy on firefighter fatality incidents and also on the process of dealing with on-duty injuries. Additionally, there must be defined processes on recommendations being communicated to department members on how to avoid similar occurrences in the future within these policies, such as lessons learned. The section continues, departments also need to report injuries and, more importantly, develop lessons learned to minimize risk in the future. Lessons learned cannot be discovered unless an analysis is conducted first. And I will submit that not everybody is doing it. There's a lot of progressive fire departments that are doing these after actions or post-incident analysis, however you want to phrase it, but not everybody is. And I think the only way to make sure it happens is to codify it, for regulated agencies have to do something along these lines. So what I propose is a modification of Life Safety Initiative Number 9 to require all regulated agencies conduct an after action report or post-incident analysis on all firefighter declared mayday, because a close call is kind of subjective. How are you going to define what's a close call and who experiences that? But a mayday declared over the radio is pretty clear and it's pretty cut and dry, and I think we owe it to our firefighters to do some type of review as to why this happened, and then we can prevent it from happening again. And then serious injury, I would recommend that we have a definition similar to what the Texas Commission already recognizes as a serious injury for firefighters. Maybe there will be slight modification as to, and then this will be open for discussion, but somebody that's off duty for 24 hours requiring medical attention or maybe experiences a career-ending injury, something such as that. But for simplicity's sake, I would recommend keeping what the Texas Commission already recognizes as a serious injury. And so the modification of what I presented before, practical experience has shown that we have a lot of champions out there that want to help out. A previous recommendation that I brought forward to you was that an outside agency or another entity conduct the analysis, just to keep things bipartisan or what have you, or keep bias out of the equation. But now I'm looking at it as just more an internal process. Keep the cost down. Let's just keep it simple. Fire departments are conducting post-incident analysis now anyway, or the progressive fire departments are, on routine regular events, structure fires. Why not just add this compulsory after action for injury or a declared mayday? And verification enforcement compliance side for the Texas Commission could be something as simple as what we do for two in, two out. Right now it's recognition of a policy, that you have a policy in place that you will abide by this. And it's more or less the honor system that it's actually going on. Or we could even add a checkbox on a health and wellness website or something similar that, yes, we conducted one. Maybe later we could worry about some type of information sharing block that we could add a narrative to or something else. The value of these I cannot overstate. In 2004, I recall, even before it was a life safety initiative recommendation, I was responding as a second chief officer to a routine structure fire in the city of Garland, and I thought we were going to lose our first firefighter that day in the line of duty. This is a 12 or 1400 square foot house, and it's just our routine bread and butter operation. But it took the after action report, the after action incident, to determine that the fire occurred in an area of known, a dead zone for radios. We knew that. We've known it for 20 years. But for 20 years, we took no action to identify what are we going to do if we have a fire in this location. We also learned that in this particular incident that we had a step-up officer that hadn't acted in a step-up capacity in over 5 years. We also learned that that particular station did not top off SCBAs like they should to the capacity in the morning. So there was a bunch of things that we thought were happening that actually weren't, and that wasn't identified until we had the after-action report. Fast forward that a few years, Tarrant County, the joint Tarrant County, Dallas County Fire Chiefs Association conducted some joint after-action reports at the request of other member departments, and we had identified things that were similar. The things that fire chiefs thought were in place, implemented in place, had policy on, were actually not occurring on the fire ground. And that's information as a chief officer I need to know, and that becomes a training issue. But again, they wouldn't have known that had we not conducted an after action. So again, I'm asking that we just modify the language on the LSI number 9, and we get rid of the close call language. We put in Mayday instead. We require it compulsory that regulated organizations do some type of PIA or after action report on these type of incidents. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? How would this be? I mean, would this be different than reporting of injuries, or if we made that requirement? I'm trying to understand how we would make that requirement.
I think Chief was alluding to it. You could develop language in 435, which is really where all of your rules are regarding PPE and SCBA and those things, that you would develop language there requiring departments to, for instance, develop policy regarding those, develop and adopt policies, SOPs, if you will, regarding doing that kind of an activity, and then requiring them to be done following those identified incidents. So that would be where the rule language, I think, would reside, is right there.
So it would be a rule change.
Or a rule addition.
Absolutely.
Okay, so yes. We would need to send this to our advisory committee.
To explore it, yeah.
To explore any rule change. Correct.
Yeah, depending on how you want to do it. I mean, if you all decide you want to see some proposed language reflecting that, we could bring that, for instance, to the next meeting. You could review it, and if you're okay with it, you could vote to publish it, and then it would go to the advisory committee following that.
I mean, I feel that this is a pretty important initiative. I mean, we're trying to... I mean, if it can educate, you know, if there's something we can put in there and create that education, well, then maybe we can prevent it from happening again and again and again. So I would like to see that language, that proposed language at our October meeting, and we can move from there.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question? So we have the 16 life safety initiatives at the awareness basically at the awareness level that we require everybody to be familiar with. Is that a correct way of looking at it?
Yes.
Everybody's been required to have it past a certain date. So going forward, this would essentially be moving it up to the operational level where we're actually going to have action in place that mandates something.
Right.
Has this happened with any of the other 16? I'm just curious. Has any of the other 16 life safety initiatives had any movement from that awareness level to the operational level in our standards?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Other than
I'd have to review them again.
Yeah. Oh. Other than the mandate that we've done for them to have it, I think that's all we've done so far.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of any, but I just wanted to ask the question to see if we've already made that move from kind of the awareness level up to the operational level and have included it where
that's
it's
a good
enforceable.
Question. I think this would be a first.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, and I appreciate you coming. I appreciate, like I've told you before, your passion for the fire service. But I think if it's already went through the Fire Chiefs Association and there was some concern with unfunded mandates and things like that, and if we're putting that requirement, I just feel like we're kind of getting into the weeds of the fire departments and just creating more data and more things that has to be looked at by staff. That I think if something like this was to pass, that we put a mandate like this, although that I do think it's important, but I know it's like my department. If we have something like that, we're going to perform one. But trying to put that requirement on departments, I think we may have a storm here because, once again, who's going to pay for these? And who's going to... So I think if it's already went through and it hasn't been able to pass, although I do say it's important, but I just think we're mandating departments to do something that I think should be on them to be able to do. If there's, you know, the commission already got standards with injuries and things like that, or firefighter fatalities that they're being looked at. So that's just my opinion on it. That I think it's a harsh requirement that could have some, you know, unfunded mandates in there that could be tough for some departments to.
Commissioner, if I may address that, to be clear, I am. taking baby steps here. I'm recommending baby steps. I'm not saying we go all out and bring in different organizations. I'm talking about a simple post-incident analysis, which most fire departments are doing now anyway. If they have a structure fire, if something goes wrong, something goes right, most progressive fire departments are conducting a PIA after action report anyway. This is something they're already doing. All I'm suggesting is that we mandate that there's a policy in place that says if you have a firefighter declared mayday, if you have a serious firefighter injury, you're going to look into it. But within the confines of your own department, we're not suggesting you go outside somewhere. We're not suggesting that we fill this big, long narrative and develop a new check sheet for the Texas Commission. What I'm suggesting right now is a baby step. It's a first step. Get people thinking about it. Make sure there is that policy in place. Can you think of anything worse? You experience a mayday, and then we don't even give it the time of day? That's incomprehensible to me. And same with a serious firefighter injury. You got somebody that may be having a career-ending injury, and we're not going to consider looking at what happened? That's incomprehensible to me. And I'm sorry, I'm passionate about the subject, but I'm suggesting is take that first step. Mandate the policy. Do something internal. You know, one of the challenges, since you brought this up, sir, is one of the challenges that I've heard, I've been preaching this message for a long time, is that I don't want to be the rat that turns in somebody that's done something wrong. Okay, so you're going to be the guy that withhold information to let somebody else die. Or if we identify our shortcomings, does that increase our liability? And so if we don't identify our shortcomings, we're just going to do it again. And I'm no lawyer, but I think most lawyers will tell you we're protected under qualified immunity to an extent, as long as it's not gross negligence. But as long as you take action to correct the wrong, your liability is reduced. And for attorneys in the room, if I'm not speaking out of turn. But I think it's as a regulatory body, the fact that we don't have a requirement to look into, at a basic level, a mayday, I think is incomprehensible.
If you wanted to consider reference, if I could, if you wanted to consider reference on what this might look like, if you had rule language, if y'all were to refer to 435.11, 13 and 15, 435.11, 435.13, 435.15 in the rules. That might give you an idea in terms of format what this might look like. And 435.11, just very quickly, that's the one that says the fire department shall develop, maintain, and use an incident management system. Incident management system shall, and it lists some things there that need to be included. 13 has to do with a personnel accountability system that the fire department shall develop, maintain, and use. Personnel accountability system that provides for rapid accounting, et cetera. So that's I would think, that what you're alluding to, that sort of a format,
yes.
Perhaps?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. At the most basic level.
And I want to touch back, don't get me wrong, that I don't think it's important. I do. But as you heard today, cancer reporting is mandatory, and we're having trouble getting that done. And to me, that is, you know, I mean, from you guys' committee's own bill, we're doing a better job on the fire ground. So I share your passion, but I'm just as passionate about cancer and reporting cancers, and we're having trouble with that. Again, I'm looking after staff and the things of that, and I just think that's up to the department, you know, if they have that. And I have a hard time from us as a committee forcing that mandate down on them without a way to pay for it, because it does cost. There's a cost to that, to performing one of those.
Does this take form of a motion, or can we just direct staff to bring us some verbiage?
Proposed rules.
Okay, well, I would like to direct staff to bring us some potential verbiage for the October meeting for us to take a look at. And then we'll discuss this further and determine the direction.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Y'all need a break?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody need a break? Or do y'all want to continue on?
Continue.
Okay.
15. Discussion of possible action. A report from Chief Roy Rubio, Carnegie Fire Department, regarding protective clothing issues experienced by the fire department.
Good morning to all commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you this morning. My name is Roy Rubio. I'm the fire chief of the city of Harlingen, Texas. We just drove into town on a long drive since 3 o'clock this morning, so bear with us a little bit. We'll get started here. The reason for my visit, or our visit here this morning, is that the city of Harlingen recently, I say within this last year, October, we had a situation where we had four individual firefighters sustain chemical burns, and that's after donning their protective clothing. They went into a situation for training. The gear had just been cleaned by the independent service provider as required by NFPA 1851, and we adhere to that and we follow it. The gear was brought back. What made it so unique is that the individual gear for the three of the firefighters was packaged, because that gear, structural firefighter gear, was assigned to ARF personnel. And they're not using the structural gear on a daily basis. Long story short, they took it to Laredo, they donned the gear, and upon donning the gear, they sustained chemical burns. That raised red flags all over. We came back, we met, just to give you a brief overview, and also the request from staff and TCFP staff to come before you and share this with you. We met, and it was determined that we had a concern with the independent service provider that had just cleaned the gear. Then there surfaced another incident that had occurred 3 months prior. Same scenario, chemical burns, it turned out to be. We connected the dots, as they say, and now we had four. We sent the individual gear to have it tested by a forensic laboratory in Dallas, and it came back that the gear was, they found cretonic anhydride on the gear. And
what was that again?
Cretonic anhydride. That posed a major concern to all of us. We had to then take an aggressive approach to rent gear for our firefighters. We're a small department, 8 stations, 110 men, but that put a big strain on us to rent gear. Try to reach out to a provider to provide that overnight is just virtually impossible. But we got it taken care of, and we outfitted most of the folks in rental gear, the first two batches that had been cleaned by that independent service provider. And then we secured the services of another independent service provider as required by NFPA 1851, and we had it re-cleaned. All this time, this was new. You know, there's no playbook to follow with this thing. We followed through with the who has the checks and balances, the oversight of this standard. Well, we found out it was Underwriters Laboratories. We reached out to Underwriters Laboratories. They, unbeknownst to us, they contacted us. They provided an investigator who shared with me that he had no clue that they were the ones that were authorized to give the certificate to the independent service provider. I said, share no more. That tells me everything. So we moved forward with that. We handed them the case. We reached out to NFPA, Bob Sullivan, who was here. I had the opportunity to meet with them earlier. We'll continue to have more dialogue after this meeting. We shared our concerns insurance with NFPA. You know, there's got to be some that shared with us, the city of Harlingen, small department, that there's a lack of oversight on the requirements set forth by the national NFPA standard 1851. That's adopted by the state of Texas. Departments throughout the state comply with it in one form or fashion, whether you do it internally or you do it through an independent service provider like we have chosen to do. It's the job gets done. And don't take me wrong, the NFPA standard is a good standard. We make sure the gear is clean. But is it? That's our main question today. We brought the gear back after it was cleaned the second time by the second independent service provider. We send it off again. We sent three or four sets to get retested. Lo and behold, the chemical's still on the outer shell. And we decided at a very huge cost to the city of Harlingen. We're a small community with $250,000 worth of gear. One shot is a lot of money for us. But we outfitted the whole department, 110 firefighters in new gear for that same reason. So we come before you today to share that we were put through, as required by TCFP, the investigation. Mr. Garner and I believe Mr. Rick Wallace and Mr. Maldonado, everybody was very, very upfront with us to make sure that we understood that there was an investigation that had to take place. We welcome the staff from TCFP. They conducted it. We had done our part as far as Harlingen Fire Administration to make sure that we complied. And we got a letter stating that. Still doesn't end. I have yet to hear from Underwriters Laboratories to no avail. We reach out to them, no contact. And we are at road's end. We're here today, basically, going forward to share with you that I just share with you a brief overview of the steps the Harlingen Fire Department has taken up to this point in helping mitigate the fire gear incident that occurred in our city in 2018. Since the ordeal started, Harlingen Fire Administration and Harlingen City Administration have dedicated a tremendous amount of time, effort, and resources to keep our firefighters safe. The City of Harlingen has and will continue to take all steps necessary to ensure the safety of its employees, and due to the steps taken, as noted above, no additional fire personnel have reported any injuries associated with Cretonic anhydride. The big question is, why was that chemical there? If we share and send out our most precious firefighter possession, that being our gear, to have it cleaned, and it comes back and we injure our firefighters, that's a problem. And there's four of them with chemical burns, some of them that are scarred for life, and we want to share that with you. Wow. It's traumatic. Wow. So going forward, we, and in conclusion here, again, appreciating your time, going forward, we would like to ask for assistance from the Commissioner of Fire Protection to address the following concerns with the current NFPA standard. Something's got to be done. Not that we want to get rid of it, no, but we want to make some changes. And Roy Rubio, chief from Harlingen, cannot do this by ourselves. We've met with the Health and Wellness Committee. They've supported our efforts. We come before you for some support. And that is to include language in the standard that would require that all independent service providers that are licensed by Underwriters Laboratories or other certifying entities to inspect and clean fire gear be regulated. There's got to be some checks and balances. You know, we approve them. They meet the okay certificate, and that's it. You know, what about the chemicals? What about the equipment? There's no oversight. The frequent inspections of equipment, process, and chemicals take place. Also, as part of this, we ask support that require that all companies provide textile for the production of fire gear produce information regarding the chemicals that go into the manufacturing of the gear. You know, we ask for all these MSDS sheets and chemicals and everything else. Well, what about our gear? You know, yeah, what chemical goes into the gear in the production? What changes take place when our firefighters go into a structure that there's 1,300 degrees Fahrenheit in there? What is it going to change anything? Is it off-gassing? We need to know that. So I ask that. I'm here. We travel 350 miles to be here with you and to share this with you. And we ask for some help. The safety of firefighters is priority, and we want you to know that. Thank you for your time. I'll answer any questions you might have. as we move forward.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask legal, do we have any legal authority to regulate anything other than fire departments? I don't think we do we?
I think not, but we're expecting these people to meet the standard, the NFPA standard, but in terms of, you know, the fire department is kind of on the hook for meeting that standard. We don't really go much farther than that in terms of who, how that gets done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we as a board, we have no control over an NFPA standard. We can, you know, we can recommend, we could do stuff like that.
But, solicit them.
You know, that standard is developed by NFPA and the team that they put together to develop the standard.
And, Mr. Moore, we understand that, and that has been explained thoroughly to us. All we're here asking is for some support. Okay. And I understand that the change cannot take place here. And I've had an opportunity to talk to Commissioner Perez and others, Cortez and others, you know, and they shared the same thing. But we need some support. As a state of Texas, it carries a lot of weight when we have support from TCFP in something like this.
I have a question. Hey, Chief, if you owned an extractor and you threw that gear in that extractor, would that remove what you were talking about, that chemical?
We asked the same question. We have extractors. And on occasion we wash, you know, and, you know, throughout the year we do that. But nobody can answer that. We reached out to Globe Manufacturer as well. They could not. Everywhere we've contacted, we've asked that. And
there's a gentleman right behind you, Mr. Reedy. He serves on one of the NFPA committees, am I not correct? So we can hear from him. Maybe he can shed some light on how we can get in there, how we can get that door open.
So my name is Jim Reedy. I sit on the NFPA 1851 committee for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. Based on what I was hearing for the chief, the UL, so independent service providers are verified and certified by Underwriter Laboratories or Intertech right now, and Armstrong, I hear, is going to be another one. So every year, the independent service provider goes through a process that they have to prove that they're doing, they're cleaning the repairs and everything up to the 1851 standard as it stands. The next 1851 standard that's going to be published in this August, next month, has 100% more regulations and requirements for the ISPs as it has in the prior standard. So we are increasing the requirements for them to prove that they're doing things the way they have to do them. As far as the chemicals, I mean, I don't even know what that chemical is. So, but the cleaning processes and what the chief was talking about, every single person that wears a set of gear in this country that buys NFPA approved can ask for a technical data package that's done every time the gear is made for the composites. So when a composite set of gear is made, they have to have it certified. And when they certify it, they create a technical data package that includes all the tests that are run to certify that gear. You have that ability to request that technical data package. So you have the ability to request it. That comes from your manufacturer. As far as the chemicals that go into the processes, that's normally in that technical data package. Your cleaner, whoever cleans your gear, or if you clean it yourself, is supposed to provide you the MSDSs for all the cleaners that they're using and the dilution formulas that they use. But that's a function of the fire department because they're the ones that are being regulated by the Texas Commission on Fire Protection. So when you sign that contract, just as my department did, we have all that information ahead of time before we sign that contract. It's part of the performance of the contract. So did I answer all the ones you...
Well, the only thing is we've asked for that, and they did not provide. We also asked that from the Underwriters Laboratory, saying we yet to receive any of that. So that's the question I have. The regulatory compliance part of it is not, there's some gaps in there or something missing. So I'm glad to hear that you're adding more to the future NHPA 1851.
Because what's coming up next is cleaning twice a year, every year at a minimum, but also cleaning after every fire. The increased verification process, the testing every year on all the components from day one. You'll have to test them every year. Those are three of the big ones. So as far as what you could get from Underwriter Laboratories, I don't know what to tell you. That's really more, that's probably sounds like a legal issue for the city, I would imagine, coming
there.
Yeah, so, myself, Daniel Buford from Bryan, he's my alternate on the committee, and Tim Tomlinson from Addison, he's the chairman of the committee. We are always available to answer or help you with any questions that you have on 1971 and 1851, and that applies to anybody. So, and we are, because we basically adopted a statute, we are very involved in what goes on, and the commission and the compliance officers also.
When do y'all have your next meeting?
I want to say it's probably in the late fall, early winter, whatever we call it here, so November.
If you could get the stuff that's being adopted next month, then it would give you time to review it, and if it seems like it works for you, then you're good. If not, you can then always...
You can always press it forward to us, yeah,
and voice your issues to them. But I agree with you. It's appalling, but I don't know if there's a lot we can do about it.
Well, you've done, but it's connected the dots here. So we move forward with that. We're very appreciative of that, Commissioner Moore and all the commissioners.
Thank you.
And in closure here, we just want to make sure that we satisfy everything we can on our part to make sure that our firefighters, this does not happen again.
Sure.
And the compliance side of it, if they're assuring that the compliance side of it is going to be in place and it's going to be part of the NFPA going forward, then we're okay. Then we move forward with it. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Could the commission mandate that entities regulated by TCFP have their equipment washed with certain chemicals only?
Can we do that? What the commission has adopted is the NFPA standard as it's currently written. It would be, and this kind of thing has been discussed over the years as to whether you wanted to vary from that NFPA standard. Those types of discussions have occurred over the years. And you, of course, have the authority to do that. I can tell you that, to the best of my knowledge, it seldom happens that I know the commission board has trusted the NFPA to determine, you know, what would be most appropriate. But in answer to your question, you can vary from the standard. As a board, you could create additional requirements or lessen the requirements of that standard, whatever you wanted to do. You can do that.
I think under statute, the NFPA is minimal.
You can't lessen it.
Exactly. That's
true.
Yeah,
we
can
go above.
Right.
But
yeah, I misspoke. That's correct.
So, don't get me in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we rely heavily on NFPA and the standards that NFPA put, you know, they put out, is they're developed by firefighters, vendors, those type of folks that sit on those committees. So I'm not a big proponent of blaming NFPA on this situation. I think that I don't know, they have to get with their service provider.
Okay.
Steve?
No.
Nothing, Tom?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Nothing?
Okay. I will mention one other thing just so that y'all are aware, and Mr. Reedy alluded to it here. The new edition of NFPA 1851 does have some significant changes in it regarding the responsibilities of fire departments to care and maintain gear. So I might mention to you that if you want to set up an agenda item in a future meeting where this can be presented to you all, so you'll be aware that it is significant, again, in terms of the impact that it's going to have on local fire departments. We could do that. We could do a presentation just so that y'all are aware.
Could you supply us with the document?
I don't think we have it yet. It should be coming out, I think they said, in August. Okay. I think it'll be available.
I didn't know if they had a pre-copy or not.
There probably are, but I haven't
okay.
seen it.
Probably in January meeting.
January, we have a workshop, so
it'd
be good to do it during the workshop in January.
Bob Sullivan from NFPA. In answer to the last question, is the document available? You can always go on our website and see the draft that is available. In order to get to the draft, you have to log into the site. All that requires is a username and password. You don't have to be an NFPA member. So you just create a profile. You can go on the website, and all of the proposed language, the meeting minutes, all that stuff is available for public viewing on the website. You can see what's going to be coming out and shown in the newer standard.
Is this the first draft copy?
If it's just about to be published, it's gone through the whole process, so it's gone through several drafts by now.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Great.
It's 10:51. All right. Move on.
18.
Item number 16.
Discussion and possible action on acceptance of gifts to the commission from the family of former State Fire Marshal Ernest A. Emerson.
The commission is authorized to accept gifts, and in this case, the family of former State Fire Marshal Ernest Emerson provided some gifts to the agency. You would, I'm sure, recognize the name, and that's the name that our library is named after. Anyway, the family provided some gifts. I have a sample of the gifts here. You can see the list there, and really what we're looking for is for y'all to just move to allow us to accept the gifts, and we will display them proudly here at the offices.
Make a motion to accept the gifts.
Show the motion. And a second.
And thank them for us.
Absolutely. We'll send her
accept
letter.
The gifts and provide a thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 17.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 403, criminal convictions and eligibility for certification.
Sorry, my legal counsel is messing with me here. I alluded to this one yesterday. We looked at the legislation in yesterday's workshop regarding the fact that a licensing agency cannot, in the way the legislation read, the licensing agency cannot consider arrests that have not resulted in a conviction or deferred adjudication when considering whether someone can qualify for a license. The language that you see here on page 66 that we're suggesting that we strike, although it doesn't use the term arrest, it does talk about conduct. So staff's sense is that in order to be consistent with the intent of that legislation, we consider striking that language that's there. And we've also made a minor change regarding conduct versus conviction of a crime.
No move.
Publication.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second to move for publication. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 18.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 421, Standards for Certification.
Commissioners, we are on page 88. Again, this is reflecting some recent legislation. This has to do with a military spouse being able to engage in an occupation without having to obtain a license, or in our case, a certification. It would be for a limited time, either while the military member is stationed here or 3 years, but no longer than 3 years in any case. And there are certain things that they would be required to submit to us and then receive approval from us once we've done the evaluation.
Move for publication.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to move for publication. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
So, Commissioners, if you're looking for any changes, revisions on here, there aren't any that are showing up on this. The reason this one is here is because of a request from the presiding officer. He asked that you all take a look at this. The discussion that kind of drove this one had to do with the lead instructor of a course. And if you remember the discussion in the last commission meeting, the way staff has been managing that is that we've been requiring that the lead instructor be on site where that course is occurring. There isn't language specifically saying that. It is how we have managed that. And so we have placed this here to provide you all some reference. We would think that if you were going to add any kind of language like that, it'd be right here. It'd be in this section if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, if you remember, this was a topic that was brought up at our last meeting.
Yep.
It was kind of a surprise, I think, to most of us that there was no language for that requirement. So, we asked that we bring it to this meeting for discussion. Do I hear any discussion?
What do you think we should alter in it? Just asking where to start.
I guess my concern is that we're requiring something that there's no backup for that requirement.
If, for instance, you wanted to add language saying the lead instructor must be on site at where the course is being delivered, if you wanted to say that, you might go to, and I'm looking on page 93, 427.307C. That's where it talks about the lead instructor. You could add a sentence right there if you wanted to. It could be as simple as that.
I guess my question is, what is the general consensus? Does a lead instructor need to be on site? Or does he not? That's where that to me is what we need to decide first.
There's a lot to that question, Commissioner.
Yes,
are we talking about a 4-month course, or are we talking
correct
about a 2-day course?
Correct.
So, I mean, that's some of the concerns that you might have.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I guess, and I'm just going to speak from a little experience on this. If you're doing, as we do at TEKS, if we're doing an academy or things like that, then we have that instructor, that lead instructor there, that coordinator or instructor 2 level, whatever requirement is on site. But sometimes we do some short courses, as you said,
right,
2-day, 3-day type courses and stuff. And usually it's those voluntary certification type situations where we'll send out a certified instructor, but the lead instructor may still be back at the office with
communications, you know, available for that inspection.
I would also say that whatever language that was proposed to for a change would also have to address instructors for distance learning, how that's determined, online educational programs and lead instructors for online programs. And then, you know, further discussion on how we're evaluating online training and distance learning programs. Something we discussed in our workshop.
That's what I think needs to happen. We need to refer this to our next workshop where we can really have time for some people to put some stuff together or think about it and come back to that workshop and because it could take quite a while to iron this out, I think. Yeah. So that would be my recommendation.
In preparation for that, can staff prepare language that reflects the current policy that's being enforced? That would help significantly to me anyway.
Okay. I have a question for Tim. Okay, let me. There's a couple of scenarios running through my head, and I want to make sure I got it right. If there's a course, an academy course, for example, you have a lead instructor that's a coordinator. If he has a certified instructor teaching one of the subjects, the coordinator has to be around? That's what you're saying?
No, the lead instructor, not the coordinator.
Okay, gotcha.
Two different people.
Right.
Or
now, if you have a guest instructor, then the lead instructor needs to be there.
What are the qualifications of the lead instructor?
They have to be an instructor, too, and they have to be certified in the discipline that's being taught.
Right.
But the purpose of one of the purposes of a lead instructor is that our rules allow for guest instructors to be used, and these guest instructors might not even hold certification at the commission at all.
That's what's
they may be subject matter experts that have been called in to teach a component of that course. The idea in that case is that the lead instructor, that guest instructor is teaching under the authority of that lead instructor. And so in that scenario, that relationship probably becomes maybe a bit more important than you might have if you had someone who's, say, a TCFP-certified instructor, and they're certified in the discipline, that sort of thing. A little bit different there. So,
I've always been under the impression that if it's a TCFP-approved course, that there had to be a TCFP-certified instructor.
You have to have one.
In that regard, in that situation, I'm for, you know, having the verbiage put in place, and we could even look at this in October.
That's my understanding from the last meeting. That's what you said. Is this came up because they came and asked to be able to use non-certified instructors, TCFP instructors, for those classes if they were guest instructors without having to have a TCFP instructor there. That was my understanding.
Right.
To how this came about. Mm-hmm. And so it would be more appropriate to maybe send this to testing curriculum to get their opinions, get some recommendations on.
We've obviously hit on about three or four different scenarios that all could be managed a little bit differently.
Start at that level and let them in.
I'm open to your direction. We can.
Pat, I see your wheels turning. So.
Oh, here he comes.
I need a little WD-40 right here, so it'll all work smoothly here. So, I'm hearing a lot of different things, and I did not have the privilege of hearing what was the premise of getting this on the agenda. So, I apologize for that. There are several things that do need to be considered. I think what Commissioner Gonzalez brought up about the online, I mean, that's a totally different ball game. I suspect that there are probably some programs out there that have a lead instructor and then invite someone to come in and then they basically vacate for maybe a short period of time, maybe a long period of time. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the possibilities here. All that being said, As chair of the curriculum and testing committee, we would welcome the opportunity for staff or whomever to bring to us what they perceive is the challenge, and then let us look and see, A, how big of a challenge is it? How big of an impact is it on the actual learning? You know, for example, I'm immediately thinking, if I bring in a guest instructor who's an expert in a subject area, and I'm going to allow them 8 hours to talk about their level of expertise, I am not going to require the quote-unquote lead instructor who is less knowledgeable about that information to sit in that same room for the 8 hours. You know, I mean, I can see where this thing could get really down to splitting hairs in the language, and I don't think that's our intent. No. I think our intent is to make sure that this agency sets up some standards that will help maintain the integrity of and the quality of the instruction for which this agency is certifying. It does us no good to certify somebody if we don't know what it is they've been through. So that's why our curriculum, having a strong curriculum, is important. That's why having instructor certifications are important. All of those things are steps that we can use to help assure that when we issue a certification, that it is meaningful. So all that being said, if you all would like for us to examine that, we would welcome that. But I would ask that whoever brings us that information, give us specific examples of where they see the problematic areas are. And we'd be more than happy to take a look at that.
Do we need a motion to that effect, Mr. Chairman?
That's right. You want a motion? Okay. I'd like to make a motion that we return this item over to the Testing and Curriculum Committee, Chapter 427, Subchapter C, with the guidance from staff on lead instructor availability, guest instructor oversight, I guess you could say, and online instruction. And as dealing with the lead instructor for online.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Pat. Okay, item number 18. Right?
20. Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 3070AC, Chapter 433, Driver Operator.
Commissioners, on page 98, we are simply striking the grandfathering provision that was there for IFSAC seals. Expired May 31st.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second for publication. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 21.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37JC, Chapter 437, fees.
So in yesterday's workshop, you had some handouts, one being some graphs kind of showing our trends from year to year for the past, since 2010. You also had some information on kind of comparison of revenue from one year to the next. And then finally, you had a one-pager that looked like this. It gave you some various scenarios that you might consider in terms of fee changes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we go to the chart that was provided to us, and on the third column, or third section down, the second one up from the bottom sets the fees at 75, 55, and 55.
Second.
Okay, Okay, so we have a motion.
Now, which one was that there,
I'll show
Commissioner?
You. I'll show you.
Third column, third main row, second from the bottom. 75, 55, 55.
Where was that?
So I do this one?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to adjust our fees, 75 for renewals, 55 for certifications, and 55 for exams. Discussion.
Yes, sir. So I second the motion because I think this is the appropriate method and methodology to use. There's a couple of reasons, and I'll give my opinions, that renewals at 75, currently for people out there, renewals are $75, certifications are $85, and exams are $55. That's the current structure that we're sitting at today. So the proposal that the motion before us today is to take renewals, to leave renewals at $75, to reduce certifications from $85 to $55, and to leave exams at $55. That is the current motion that is before us today. Is that right, Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
And I think that the renewals are particularly paid, and the knowledge of what renewals are going to be in the next fiscal year of a governmental agency or political subdivision in the state, there's common practice and methods to be able to budget for something like that. It is difficult, in my opinion, to budget for certifications and exams on and off year that you may not know what new certifications come out for your agency, what certifications you may have to get from retirees, from new hires, from, advanced levels of certification. Those things are sometimes less likely and less able to budget for those budgetary impacts for some of the things. Our annual renewals are something I think agencies and municipalities and counties can budget for and know what that's going to be. In addition, I think as an agency, it is a little bit more difficult for us to know exactly what certification and exams are going to do on an annual basis. They could climb, increase, and decline, where renewals we're going to see not necessarily see that high level of adjustment up or down. So with that, I'll yield the floor.
Any other discussion on this?
Just for purposes of how it'll be reflected in the rules, the rule language that you have here in front of you in 437, your motion really is reflected as one single change, and it's in 437.3A. We changed the 85 to 55. So that's the only rule change that is required.
And that's for publication.
This would be for publication. Yeah.
Reed,
Commissioners, hey, for my personal self, I'd love to know what we're talking about, but we don't have any copies out there, and we don't have any information as far as the extra copy that you guys got that has the change in information on it from what the agenda is. So.
Not yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of why,
we'll share.
That's kind of why I thought it was a good idea to make that statement.
Mr. Chairman, the only problem that I have that sticks a little bit on me is the brunt of the certifications is paid by the municipalities. You're only touching one part of it. Yeah, we pay, sometimes we pay the certifications of the guys that get certified, but the blood level where they're paying for are in the recertifications. So the only thing that I have a problem with, we're not reducing that amount any whatsoever.
And we did reduce that amount last year.
Yeah, I understand.
That's where it went from 85 to 75.
But we were also called out because we didn't reduce it enough.
Well, we didn't have a choice.
and I would, Commissioner, if you would, allow me to respond to that. I think that, you know, there's some issues on Chapter 419, Government Code 419.026, that talks about renewals, and it also talks about certification fees. And part of that certification fee says that we can only recoup the amount of certification fees necessary for the cost and connections with issuing the certificate specifically. So, you know, that's why I think that, you know, the renewals are not in that same category as issuing a new certificate and the cost of issuing the certificate. So I think that lowering that would allow us to, I can read it to you if you want to see a face over there. So The commission by rule shall set the amount of the fee under this subsection in an amount designed to recover the commission's cost in connection with issuing certificates under this subchapter, including the cost to the commission of obtaining fingerprint database history records. The employing agency or entity shall pay the fee in the manner prescribed by commission rule.
Okay, so with that read, Tim, does this cover the cost?
Yes.
I'll see.
The analysis that we did last year before y'all reduced the testing fee, that was kind of where we came up with
That's correct.
We would do the same general analysis, I think, for this. So yes. Yeah.
Okay. Keeps us in the black.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Hold on a second. I'm just concerned because our biannual revenue will be, you know, just a bit over what we're required to make, and so I don't know.
That's
it's too much of a risk.
It's only $100,000. It's only $100,000 more.
I know, but we're not even certain if we're going to be getting this amount of renewal certifications or exams.
Okay. Well, there's a 5% contingency in there as well.
We do have that 5% commission, 5% cushion built in to all of those targets that you see there. And keep in mind that the only thing that I used when I factored this in were those three types of fees that we have. Significant other revenue coming in from IFSACs and late fees and all the other things that cushion it even more.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Effective.
This is proposed.
Oh, that's right. Proposed. All right. 22.
Discussing possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 PAC, Chapter 445, Administrative Inspections and Penalties.
Commissioners, this one is again one where we have worked to establish better language in our standards manual. I'm sorry?
Small C commission.
On page 113 is where it changes it.
Yeah. 47? Is that the one you're talking about?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
Page is 107?
I'm looking at 108, yes.
Okay.
Or 107, yeah, you can start with 107. Yeah, the minor changes there, yeah. Where we've developed more clear language regarding violations, penalty amounts, that sort of thing. And so what has been developed on pages, for instance, 108, 109, 10, and 11, 12 and 13, those are your what we are describing as a penalty matrix, where it has listed, in that case, minor violations with penalty amounts. And then if you go on to page 114, you'll see a matrix beginning there for major. First group was for minor, second group is for major. You'll notice that the penalty range for these, for like all the minors, is the same. It's the same range, same with the majors. But I think the more important aspect of this at this point, and we could of course always go back later and fine-tune these penalty amounts if we wanted to. That I think would take some committee work to do that. I think I would recommend committee work to do that. But the important aspect of this is it lays out the types of violations. And I do want to mention that when you're looking at all these violations in these matrices, that they reflect the extensive inspection list that our compliance team developed several months ago. This reflects what they had developed there. So now you have two very comprehensive documents. So one being the list that they'll use to do inspections with, and as well as the list that departments can see. These are the things that are going to get looked at. And now we've also placed them into the rules here. So one is very reflective of the other.
Move for publication.
Here we have a motion for second. Publication. Second. Discussion.
Do you have comments?
Yeah, I have a question.
I have one.
We don't have a violation for the entities who do not report the cancer reports or anything that's been reported to Workman's Comp who failed to report to us.
Injury reporting, do you remember where that is on the...
It's under general.
Not specifically that. It has to do with injury reporting, which
injury
is the module.
It's at the top of each checklist.
Well, that would fall
under
that.
General.
I'm sorry?
And the non-cancer reporting would fall under that injury reporting.
Right.
So it would just be in general, 250 to 500?
The violation is listed in general at the very beginning of each of the two charts.
So I have here SOP for wellness and fitness, and there's no amount, 435.21.
For example, on page 106.
No, do we need to add
108
there?
Page 108.
The question is, do we need to add an amount there?
We missed that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, we can add that in there when we publish.
This is what you
Tim. No, I understand. So did you see where the failure to report injuries is for 435.23, just a little bit further down? Failure of organization utilizing FIDO to report firefighter injuries. That's where that would fall.
Page 108.
I'm looking at 106 here for minor violations as well. So there is a place that we would... We'll add that other, the amounts, though.
Okay.
It looks like I got missed. Someone was going to ask
a question, Tim, and maybe it's not in this section. When we charge fees and look at fee structures and things like that and curative penalties, is there a board of review or what is the process for an agency to dispute fees and things like that? We currently have a process. Sorry, Andrew.
If anything's going to happen, like if we're going to ding them, assess a penalty against them, revoke a certification, first goes to an informal conference. Usually that's Paul and staff. They get to sit down and talk about it and possibly work it out. And then if the commission's going to proceed, it'll go over to a hearing in the State Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay.
The question will be, okay, did you do X, Y, or Z? Did you fail to do X, Y, or Z? And we'll get a proposal, and we'll come back to y'all or the executive director to adopt as a final order.
Okay. So there is a process if we're having pecuniary interest in us. So there is a process that they could use to have civil process, if you will.
Yeah, I think just historically the commission has been saying, fix your problem, and we're not after your pocketbook.
Correct. I agree.
Mr. Reed?
Commissioners, Jim Reed for the TSAFF. Compliments to the staff. It's very well. It is very well done. I noted in there a lot of safety to the threat of the individual and an immediate threat to the individual as far as the safety aspects of this. I'm wondering, can we put in there or should we put in there if there's a confirmed injury to an individual because the department didn't comply with an SOP or whatever they were supposed to do, if it's an injury, if their noncompliance causes an injury, specifically, that should be a definite penalty, I would think. And it's just a suggestion. Obviously, a fatality or a disabling injury, a permanently disabling injury, due to noncompliance with the rules that we set up, should be a definite penalty. I don't know if that has to be outlined in there or not.
Oh, that's getting deep.
I don't know. It's just a guy. It kind of jumped out at me.
Court proposal, so advisory could look at that.
Or no, it doesn't go to advisory.
No.
This is just for publication.
Right. But it wouldn't go to
advisory. So as an example.
If we changed it, then it would go to advisory, before we.
As an example, not blaming anybody in Harlingen or their ISP or anything like that. If four firefighters suffered an injury because of noncompliance with our rules, a definite injury, there should be no debate about what kind of injury that is. It is this type of injury. This is set out as far as a violation, rather than the inspector or the compliance officer's interpretation or whatever it says in there, what they feel. You know what I mean? I'm not sure I'm
Commissioners, can I respond to that just to make sure I'm understanding? For example, with Harlingen, we investigated and found that there was no failure to comply with any of the rules. Had we found failure to comply with a rule, we would have then issued a requirement to comply. And so
that to me is that partially fixes the problem, but to cause an injury to someone by your noncompliance with our rules, to me is it should be addressed. It's more of an immediate. There's no fix it, that slap on the wrist, fix it, and we'll get to you later kind of thing. I'm just wondering that's all, because that's more definitive to me. If you break our rules and we tell you, hey, fix what your problem is and going forward, it'll be okay or whatever. If you break our rules and somebody gets injured because you broke our rules, that to me is a different level of our violation.
As I understand it,
I think this is for other later discussion.
Yeah, I would have
put the way. Do you understand what I mean?
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Motion and a second for publication on this, correct?
Yes.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries. And then it'll... 23, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 453, Hazardous Materials. This is for publication.
Again, this one is on page 124, simply removing the grandfathering provision for IFSAC seals.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second for approval. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 24.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 457, minimum standards for incident safety officer certification.
And once again, on page 128, doing the same thing. We're removing the grandfathering language for IFSAC.
So moved. Second.
Motion and a second for approval of publication. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 25.
discussing a possible action regarding the addition of classes or courses to the A list and B list for higher levels of certification.
So here's a list for you. It represents a lot of work on the part of my certification manager. She did a lot of review of a lot of courses to see how they fell. She had gotten some information in from some of our stakeholders and spent a lot of time on these. So these would be our recommendations to go ahead and add these to the A and B lists.
Motion to add those to the A and B list.
Second. Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
This can be effective immediately. This doesn't have to go to the advisory committee, by the way.
Okay. About motion to adopt the proposed courses for the A and B list. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. 26.
We've
already done 26.
Discussing possible action on matters from the executive director. A. Decisions of the executive director in contested cases and consent orders.
Nothing to report on this at this point.
B. Status regarding the division functions. A. Training, approval, and testing.
Busy. In a word, very, very busy. We continue to expand in terms of our online reporting, online testing, of the exams given during the third quarter. About 35% of the exams conducted were online exams. So people are really beginning to pick up on this now and beginning to use it. So I'm excited about that. As we're able to do more online exams, it eases the burden from our staff to have to print and package and ship exams and get them back and grade them and all that. The online testing is just very, very quick. So I'm real excited to see this continue to expand for us.
A, B, certification and professional development, training applications, IFSEC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource requests.
Again, I think I said busy on the last one. It was busy here, too. Yeah, same thing. Yeah, you can see, if you look on page 170, you can see the numbers for certificates issued, IFSAC seals issued. Both of those continue to go up fairly dramatically, in fact.
C, compliance, biannual inspections, compliance officers training, issues involving regulated entities.
Again, on 173, you can see the information there for 173 and 174, the activities for the compliance section. I will note that one of the things that we began doing this past year that is definitely having, I think, a positive impact overall on what's going on out there is we really have begun to expand our audit, what we call audits of training programs in progress. It is an inspection of sorts, but it's not the biannual inspection. These are just where we're going in and coming on site to determine whether a training program is doing what it's supposed to be doing when it says it's doing it.
While the training is occurring.
While the training is occurring, or the testing is occurring. Not unusual for our compliance guys to show up on a day that they're doing skill testing, for instance, to ensure that they're doing that correctly. We obviously are finding things, which was kind of to be expected because we really had not, this is not an activity that we've been doing a lot of over the years, so there's been a lot more emphasis on that, and I think it's going to have a real positive effect on the quality of training out there.
Can we get more on that in October? Any improvements made or compliance report on
results of audits?
Yeah.
That in particular?
Yeah.
Okay.
D, informational technology, public website design, farm, and vital equipment, CAPS, and IT security policy and services requested.
Like I said, busy for the other one. They've been busy, too. They've been real, real busy. I guess the only thing I would mention here is that if you haven't seen it, you need to be sure to take a look at our new website. It's a complete overhaul of design and function. So far, we've had a lot of compliments on it. We do have a place there at the top of the homepage where you can provide feedback. So please feel free to do that as you go in there and you're looking at it. And you want to shoot us some feedback, I know they would appreciate that.
Tim, the most recent outage that happened like within a week or so, that's just growing pains. I mean, it's part of this improvement process.
That was a server that crashed.
Okay.
It took everything.
Yeah. I did have a lot of questions coming my way about that. But
that's what it was.
Okay.
Actually, one of the things we're looking at right now is how to better secure our operations, moving some things off-site, that kind of thing. So IT staff's looking at costs right now to see what it will take to do something like that.
Get by.
Executive session pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.0741 for discussion of personal matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of the executive director and the appointment, employment, reassignment, or duties of personnel acting on an interim basis in this position.
Okay, I would like to go into executive session. I would ask that Andrew and Tim please hang in here. For everyone else, we'll go into executive session as soon as the room is cleared, and there really won't be a whole lot of further action after when we come back in. I can tell you all that. You're welcome to stick around, but whatever you want to do. Okay, if I turn the mic back.
I don't got my mother because she was here.
We'll wait for Andrew.
Hello.
Oh, did y'all know that Andrew is... Turn your mics off again, because we're just talking.
Y'all know that this is Andrew's last. This will be our new legal counsel.
I'm being a
vote-in. Yeah, we're back in session. We're back in
session. Okay, I'm just going to hand you a piece of paper just so that you've got it. This is from our latest budget. Greatest. Here is the group for this agency. That is the maximum allowable. This is 2018-19 by name. I was able to find that. This is my group, and that's the range for that group. This is per the 18-19 by name. It's probably adjusted up a little bit for the 2021, but I just couldn't find it.
Okay, so
we're good?
We're good.
Oh,
we're good. Okay. Now we got to wait for Andy.
He was getting down.
What's this?
They're on the way back.
29. All right, we're back in regular session at 12:27.
29. Open sessions for further discussion and possible action regarding preceding agenda items. Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we give our executive director a 5% pay raise.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to authorize a 5% merit pay raise for the executive director of the agency.
No, are you saying merit?
Salary increase.
Salary increase.
Yeah.
Salary
increase. One-time merit. Salary increase.
Salary increase.
Great.
Any effective September 1st, 2019.
Yes.
New fiscal year.
Yes.
Any discussion?
Well deserved.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Find the agenda item I've been waiting for this whole time.
Okay, do I hear a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
We have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.